Calling to order the meeting of the Akron Metropolitan Area Transportation Study for this Thursday, March 24th, 2022. Do we have a quorum, Chairman Bates?
Yes, we do.
Okay, thank you. We have audience participation as an item. I don't believe we have
anybody today. We have no participation.
Okay. That takes us to item number two, which are our minutes. Did everybody have a chance to review the January 27th, 2022 meeting minutes? And if so, could I have a motion?
Motion to share a written.
Second, George.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion before we take a vote? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Thank you. Next on the agenda is staff reports. The first item, item A, is financial progress report. This will be by Director Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you can see on attachment 3A, this includes our budget through February 28th. I've expended about 52% of the budget, and we are in very good shape for the fiscal year. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Seeing that there's no questions, I'll need a motion to accept the financial progress report.
So moved, Gonski.
Second, Humphrey.
We have a motion and a second to approve the financial progress report.
Did you get the second?
No, you can't.
Yeah, Tom Hudson. Sure.
Thank you, Bud. Okay, any comment before we take a vote? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, next item 3B is the technical progress report. Again, Director Baker.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple of things, all on the federal level. You might have seen a little over a week ago, we had an omnibus bill for the fiscal year. It was $1.5 trillion. The biggest thing to come out of that is that earmarks are back. We saw quite a few of them. I believe in the text of the legislation, there was over $800 million worth of earmarks contained in the omnibus bill. I say that neither as a good or bad thing, but other is something I think for all of us to be aware of, that is another avenue potentially to find funding on top of all the new federal grants that are available through the bipartisan infrastructure bill. Also, we sent out an email yesterday regarding a notice of available funds for the Mega Regions grant, as well as the infra grant. These were expected to be released this first quarter. I believe they're due in late May. Also, the RAISE grant applications are due here in a couple weeks. If anyone is applying for those and needs letters of support, et cetera, please let our staff know, as we have gotten quite a few requests and have been working through those. But with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. If there's no questions, we'll move on to item 3C, which is the AMATS federal funds report. This is attachment 3C, and we'll have a presentation by Dave Witt.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to touch on a couple things here today. First of all, we are very close to the end of the third quarter, fiscal year 22, and we're still concerned about the number of unsold projects in both the third quarter and the fourth quarter. Now, we are getting some updates that some projects are selling. There's a little bit of a lag between when they sell and when we have official notice of that. So hopefully we don't run into any issues. But I did want to remind you that the fourth quarter is really only 2 months long, because in June, ODOT pretty much, kind of shuts down the books for their year-end stuff. So, if you have any irregularities, if you get a project in the fourth quarter and you have something that goes wrong, it doesn't allow much time to rebid that project. The other thing I wanted to mention was we, at our last meeting in January, we approved 37 STBG resurfacing and TASA projects, and in the previous meeting in December, we approved 7 new CMAC projects, and now it's up to all the sponsors that receive projects to get with ODOT and program them. You guys are doing a good job with it, but we still have quite a few that I don't think have been programmed yet. So don't forget to program your new projects. And also, one last thing, when you look at the funding report, when you look at new projects that you just received, you might see, you know, some of them sitting out in 26 or 27. You know, we will try to pull those in, even if you applied for our PDIP project, our PDIP program, so that you only have to pay 10%. Still work on them and get them ready as if they were going to go in 24. And as we are able to, we'll try to move them up. But we have to kind of park them out in later years for fiscal constraint, because we just simply don't have the budget right now to put them in 24. But we will try to move them up, and we'll do that based on project readiness and on your PCI score. So if there's any questions, I'd be glad to take those.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Goulet. This brings us to item number four, old business. We do have one item, item A, which is the public participation plan. We had a presentation at the last meeting about the plan, and we were looking for comments. And so today they're presenting the final draft of 3P. And we have Kerry Prater, and this is attachment 4A. So, Kerry?
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The public comment period for the draft public participation plan ended last week. There has been little change to this item since my initial presentation to the committee back in January. It has been updated to incorporate a few suggestions from the technical advisory committee. And these suggested changes include the maps depicting the elderly and low-income and minority populations. It was suggested that we make better use of color and that we also cite the source data for these maps. And the other change concerns the table depicting our traditional methods of public outreach in Appendix G. A suggestion was made that we clarify language regarding Title VI complaints received and Title VI complaints that are resolved. Those changes have been incorporated into this latest item. The draft was presented during last week's virtual meeting of the Citizens Involvement Committee, and we did not receive any significant comments at that time. I'll be glad to field any questions if you have any regarding this item, and we do need approval on it. Thank you.
Okay.
Move to approve.
Klein.
Second, Johnson.
There are a motion and a second to approve. Any other comments before we vote? Okay, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? Okay, we have none. Okay, thank you. That takes us to item number five under new business. Under item A, we have traffic crashes and safety performance measures. This is reported on by Amy Prater and Dave Poulet, and this is attachment 5A in your packet.
How are you guys today? Hopefully good. I'm going to discuss the MS crash report for 2018 to 2020. First off, I want to do a presentation overview. The safe systems approach is the new system that we're using. Then we're going to discuss trends, specifically that there's less traffic, but there's been more fatalities. Also, we're going to discuss the high crash segments and intersections, which I will advise has changed a lot since the last report. Then we're going to discuss bicycle and pedestrian safety, safety performance measures, and ODOT safety program. So the safe systems approach is taking a look at why fatalities are rising. It's shifting from looking at all crashes to focusing on just fatalities and serious crashes, and less emphasis on crash rate overall. It strives to balance transportation needs not just for motorists, but for all road users, pedestrians, bicyclists. And the safe system approach acknowledges that people make mistakes and the responsibility is shared. So in 2020, our vehicle miles traveled actually reduced by 12.9%, and our total crashes decreased by 15.8%. Our serious injury crashes, so we have the table here. We have the table here, and you can see that the crashes went down ever so slightly. But just remember that a crash is one event, but multiple vehicles can be involved in the crash, and multiple occupants could be injured. So that's where the difference in the table goes. Serious injury crashes decreased by 3, and serious injuries decreased by 16 in 2019. Fatalities, however, increased, even though the amount of vehicles on the road have decreased. You can see fatalities have definitely increased. This is not just a local trend. This is a statewide, national trend. So we're trying to figure out why this is exactly happening, but we're not really sure 100% why. We have some ideas. Now, if you look at this crash report and compare it to the last crash report, the methodology has changed substantially. In the last crash report, we focused on total number of crashes, and this time we're focusing more on specifically crashes that have at least 30% of all the crashes are injury and fatality. So a lot of that has changed. We downloaded the crashes from ODOT and plotted them in GIS, and then we started checking them. We've noticed that there's a lot of them that are not plotted in the correct locations, so we've done a lot of checking. One of the problems is if it's a state route and it crosses another state route multiple times, sometimes they put it at the wrong intersection. Also, we checked heavily on freeway interchanges. Sometimes it's at the intersection with the ramps. Sometimes it's on the ramps. Sometimes it's on the mainline freeway. Sometimes it's on the mainline roadway. So we make sure that we pull those intersections out and pull those mainline crashes out so that we don't count them in places that they are not. So also, we put about a 250-foot radius on each intersection, and that is kind of our buffer to assume that those are within the intersection, and those are usually intersection crashes. Some exceptions to that rule is if they're departing an intersection, or if someone's pulling out of a driveway that's adjacent to the intersection, those are still considered segment crashes. So as I was saying, this is our new methodology. Our high crash segments are now for segments. It's 3 crashes per mile per year, and a minimum of 30% crashes have to have injury and fatality. That's a big, huge change. If you look at your data, it'll definitely be not the same as last time. And then intersections, it's 9 crashes in a 3-year period with a minimum of 30% crashes for injury and fatalities. And we no longer focus just on crash rate, but severity. So then we rank these locations by number of crashes and the percentage of injury and fatality. For example, if a location is 22 in number of crashes and 11 in percentage of injury and fatality crashes, the total rank would be 33. So we looked at intersections and segments. For segments, our highest segment is Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard between North Main and North Broadway in Akron. And our highest intersection is actually out in Portage County at US 224 and State Route 225. This is definitely a big change. Also, we do not analyze freeways specifically. ODOT analyzes the freeways, and they have they take 1/10 of a mile segments. They don't make any kind of adjustments. They just go straight down the road in 1/10 of a mile segments. And then for Ohio, the only the 50 rural and 50 urban top locations are actually even considered as safety problems. And now I'll pass it over to Dave to discuss the rest of the safety report.
Okay, thank you. Two things I'd like to mention before I continue on with the, I guess you'd call it the non-motorized section, is I have a list of all the crashes sorted by community. I have like 10 copies of intersections and 10 copies of the segments. So if you'd be interested in having a copy of the segments sorted by community, please see me. It's a little easier to find your locations that way. And the other thing I wanted to mention was in 2020 there were like 69 fatalities. It really jumped up. This is overall, and I just couldn't help but look at 21. I wanted to see what did 21 do. And even though that, once again, that data is not part of this report, I just wanted to check fatalities. And boy, unfortunately, 21 was like 70 fatalities. So it's really strange. And I think that was really a driving force behind ODOT changing their methodology. Anyhow, continuing on with bicycle and pedestrian crashes, some characteristics of these crashes is they have a very high percentage of injuries, 73 and 82% respectively. They're more random and spread out. Map 3 and 4 in the reports show the location of those crashes. The only thing that I can generalize is they're somewhat proportional to population density, but not really like certain locations, like a certain intersection or a certain segment. Just generally, wherever there's more people, there's usually more of these. Many involve younger people. Many times, bike riders, drivers, pedestrians, they don't really understand the rules they're supposed to follow, and education is often an effective countermeasure. Now, there's another component of this that I'm very concerned about in Akron, and I believe it was in 2020 or 2019, Akron started having scooters that you could rent. A company comes in, they place scooters around, and you can rent them. And I never did see it on a crash report. I never saw a scooter in like a scooter category. So I called my contact at the police department, and he said for now they're treating scooters as pedestrians if a scooter is in an accident. But it's kind of a bad combination of these things being in the street with mixed in the street with other traffic. So that is something I do want to try to keep tabs on in the future. Bicycle crash trends actually decreased in 2020. I was kind of surprised by this because with gyms closing and people having to stay home, I don't know. I noticed a lot more people out riding bikes and such, walking, riding bikes and such. But I think the big thing is you didn't have as much traffic, so there wasn't as much conflict with traffic. So that's good news. Bicycle crashes went down. This is the monthly trend for bicycle crashes. Obviously, they happen more in the warm months through the summer. They peak in July and August. It's easy to be a pedestrian in the wintertime, but it's hard to, it's really tough to ride a bike in the snow. When I was going through the data, I noticed this anomaly in the monthly trends. 2018 and 2019 peaked as normal, July or August, but then 2020 was really flat. It just we just didn't have that peak. So Still not sure why that happened. I just thought it was interesting to show. Pedestrian crashes also decreased, both number of crashes, injuries, and fatalities. Once again, pedestrian crashes are kind of just the opposite of bicycle crashes. They actually kind of go down a little bit in the summer. I think maybe less kids walking to school and such. I'm not sure that it's always been that way, and they always peaked in October. October has always been the peak month for pedestrian crash trends. And my only answer to that is I've looked at all these all these incidents that happened in October, and I just think it's our weather. October is usually a pretty nice weather month, at least the last several years. But yet the hours of daylight are significantly shorter. It gets it's dark in the morning, it's dark in the evening when people are out and about. So I think that's contributing to it. Once again, when you look at it year by year, 18 and 19 peaked in October as they traditionally do, but 2020, it didn't have that peak in October. It had a slight peak in November, but once again, it was just different. So I thought that was another interesting observation I ran into. Pedestrian crashes happen. You have a little peak in the morning, people walking to school, kids walking to school, people walking to work, whatever. And especially during the dark months, that's kind of dangerous. And then, of course, in the afternoon and evening when people are out and about, you have some additional peaks. Safety performance measures. This is a new, it's not new any longer, but this is a new thing that we have to keep track of. It's a federal requirement. We have to keep track of number of fatalities per million vehicle miles traveled, number of serious injuries per vehicle miles traveled, and number of non-motorized fatalities and serious injuries. So when this started in 2015, we took 5 years of data. We took 2011 to 2015, averaged out these values, and then every year we just take another 5 years of data and compare it to that original 5 years. Unfortunately, we didn't do too good this time with number of fatalities. Obviously, you could see from Amy's graph how those really went up in 2020. So those are up 14%. More fatalities and less traffic. The fatalities per vehicle miles traveled is also up. Number of serious injuries are down. Serious injuries per vehicle miles traveled down, and number of non-motorized fatalities and serious injuries are down. So we did okay in three of the five categories. Just want to touch on ODOT safety programs. Once again, this is changing, and I want to make sure that you're aware of the new approach and the new programs that they are offering. Once again, as Amy alluded to, the trend now is the safe systems approach, where it looks more at fatalities and serious injury crashes and just injury crashes than total crashes. That's why you'll see your list is a little different now. Something unique about this crash report, Taomi Circle has always been not at the top, but it's always been kind of up there. Taomi Circle didn't even make this crash report because they had 200, I looked at it, they had 244 crashes, but they had a very, very small percentage. I think only 8 or 9% were injury related. So once again, those are the kind of things that are going to change now. It's not just number of crashes that matter, it's number of injuries and fatalities. So ODOT offers three safety programs, abbreviated, formal, and systemic. The abbreviated program is something that they want to implement quickly. It's an improvement that they want to implement quickly. Usually under $250,000, must be constructed within 2 years. Funding is for construction only, but you still have to have at least 3 crashes per year. Don't accept applications 4 times a year, December 31st, March 31st, June 30th, and September 30th. ODOT's formal safety program is probably the one that you're most familiar with. That's the traditional, I'll call it the traditional safety program. This is more for higher cost, larger improvements. Once again, minimum threshold, 3 crashes per year, 30% injury or fatalities. A couple things that are different with the program now. ODOT will extend opportunities for communities with fewer financial resources, and communities with higher level of poverty can receive up to 10 additional points. So that's something that that we never scored before. So that is something that will be new. The deadline used to be this program accepted applications 2 times a year. I believe it was in March and September, or April and September. One time now. They'll accept applications 1 time, August 31st of 22. And then the systemic safety program is a program that's going to focus on pedestrian and roadway departure crashes. They pick those 2 types of crashes because those are the 2 that have the most injuries and fatalities. You could get up to $2 million for a pedestrian improvement, 5 for a roadway departure improvement, 10% local match required. But once again, that could be reduced if your community is in financial distress. And the thing about these, they won't be scored. The applications will just be reviewed by a committee to ensure that they meet the criteria. And unfortunately, the last round was accepted in January of 22, but hopefully they'll accept them again in January of 23. I apologize for not maybe getting that information. I kind of found out late myself. So that's it. If your community does have a location that you're interested in or you're wondering about, feel free to call me or call Amy. We'd be glad to try to help you. We'll even come out and look at it if you'd like. And if there's any questions, I'd be glad to take those. Yes?
High crash intersections.
Yes.
The worst accident location in AMETS is US 224 at SR 225 Portage County.
That's correct.
It's in Deerfield.
Yes.
The county engineer doesn't handle it. The township can't handle it. It's a state problem. Only 50 projects, only 50 intersections will be done statewide. Where does that particular intersection rank statewide? No, if we're going to get the worst accident in MS territory, upgrade.
I think the number 50 that you heard came from Amy's talking about freeways. They only deal with the top 50 freeway locations.
Okay, freeways?
Yes, okay. That's just freeway locations.
Yeah, I misheard that. Sorry.
Yeah, so I don't know where that might stand statewide, but that criteria doesn't apply to this.
Thank you.
Yes.
David, just a comment that you said bicycle accidents seem to be going down. Do you think that has a direct correlation with the fact that we've been, all the communities are putting more into bike trails?
Oh, absolutely.
Off-road, yeah, and all that.
Absolutely.
So we've made money available and we're putting that in there. So I think
that's
why we could see that happening.
Oh, yes, absolutely. In fact, I remember seeing news stories. I remember seeing news stories where the bike trails were just packed with people. People getting out and using bike trails, and maybe instead of roads. because we have, you know, more available now. So, absolutely. Any other questions? Okay, I believe this does require an approval.
Okay, so we have item before us, and a motion requested for the traffic crashes and safety performance measures. Do I have a motion to accept?
Paradise, so moved. Second, Judge.
You got those? All right. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion before we vote? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Are there any opposed? I hear none. Okay, thank you. Next item is 5B. This is a 2020 update of the AMAPS area federal functional classification of highways. This is for discussion only. This is attachment 5B in your packet, and Amy Prater will be presenting this.
Hi. Today I'm going to be discussing the federal functional classification system. So what is federal functional classification? It's basically a grouping of roadways based on its relative importance and function. Federal functional classifications are divided into rural and urban categories based on the 2020 census, which we don't have yet. Just putting that up there. It's based on mobility and access, as you can see by this table. The more mobility is the freeways, and the more access would be like your local roadways. And then there's everything in between. So the 2013 federal standard for functional class guidelines, that's our most recent that we have currently. We may get a new one, I'm not sure. But these are the percentages for rural and urban that we are allotted basically statewide. And these, the second table is our current percentages that we have in the AMAPS area. Now, if you notice, our interstates are above the thresholds, but that honestly cannot be helped. We have more interstates in our area than average. So we do try to stay towards the lower range in principal arterials, which we do have control over, but the interstates we don't have really any control. It's an interstate, it's an interstate. AMAT staff is asking members to submit possible changes by May 27th. There is a table in your packet, and we'll be sending those out electronically as well, so you can submit those. Once the 2020 draft functional classifications are received from ODOT, based on the 2020 census, the staff will review the possible changes and present recommendations to the TAC TIP subcommittee. Just a reminder that minor collectors and local roads are not eligible for federal funds. And please note, if you are requesting additions, the staff may request that you relinquish mileage elsewhere because we still have to stay within those thresholds. Questions?
Okay, thank you. Our next item on our agenda is item 6 resolutions, and the first is item 6A, resolution 2205, and this is revised. This will be approving amendment number 15 to the fiscal year 2021-2024 transportation improvement program to add a right-of-way phase to an existing project and to add one new project. This will be presented by Mr. Dave Kulay.
Okay, thank you. Actually, before I get into this, I want to mention one more thing about the crash report. After the meeting last week, we discovered that the intersection map, just the map, had some dots on it that didn't belong there. So what you have in your packet is a corrected version. If you were here last week and you have a version from last week, just disregard that one, but there were some revisions made on just on the map. I forgot to mention that. I'm sorry. Okay, getting back to resolution 2022-05R, and it's revised because we had to add an item at the last minute. This is to add a right-of-way phase and then add that existing project. The right-of-way phase is being added to the I-77 widening up in Richfield and Richfield Township. This is a big project, adding an additional lane in each direction, and a right-of-way phase is being added using $51,000 of federal funds and $12,800 in state funds. And the other project that is being added is a new safety project in Wayne County. It's the intersection of State Route 57 and State Route 604. This four-way stop intersection is being converted into a roundabout. The amendment will add $556,000 for engineering only in fiscal year 23. The actual construction is off a few years out, and it'll be in the next TIP. This is just for engineering. If there's any questions, I'd be glad to answer them.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Poulet. This requires a motion, and so we have a motion for Resolution 2022-05 as revised.
So moved, Paradise.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Okay, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? There are none. All right, next item is 6B. This is Resolution 2022-06. This is to add Ohio EPA-awarded DERG funds for Metro and HARTA for the fiscal year 2021 through 2024. TIP Amendment Number 16. This will be presented by Mr. Jeff Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Attachment 6B in your packet. This resolution seeks to add recently awarded funds for Metro and HARTA to the TIP. The state's awarding these funds through its diesel emissions reduction grant program, as discussed in the attached memorandum. Funds are derived from the Federal Highway Administration CMAQ program. The awards are granted outside of the standard MPO statewide CMAQ program and constitute additional funds for the area. HARTA is being awarded $1.1 million in federal funds for the purchase of three large CNG buses programmed in 2024. The total cost was nearly $1.6 million. Metro is being awarded $855,000 in federal funds for the purchase of two large CNG buses programmed in 2023, with the total cost being nearly $1.1 million. HARTA is also requesting to amend their planning and preventive maintenance projects fiscal years 2023 and 2024 using additional federal funds from their agency's balance of available funds. The staff is requesting approval of Resolution 2022-06 with the TAC and CIC approving this last week. Are there any questions?
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Gardner. With that, do we hear a motion?
So moved, Adams.
Chair. Second.
Adamson. Okay. Tom Sheridan. Second. We have a motion and a second on the floor. Any discussion before you vote? All in favor of adopting Resolution 2022-06, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? There are none. Thank you. Brings us to our favorite part of the meeting, other business, where I don't think we have anything.
I got one item I'd like to bring up.
All right. Mr. Paradise.
Does this group want to consider having the board draft a letter to our legislators, both in Columbus and in D.C., opposing any changes, any reduction in the gasoline taxes? We've been talking about suspending it for years, stuff's dropping the recently increased one. We want to have a letter drafted in case such action becomes necessary. We have a letter to.
We can definitely do that. I believe it's Senate Bill 277 is the one statewide that's circulating regarding a suspension of the gas tax and electric vehicle fees for a period of time. And then, yes, there's been some push on the feds to do the same as well. Typically, this group has been very adamant about increasing the gas tax as well as, obviously, at least keeping it whole. So I think the staff would would be happy to and would be supportive if this group felt like now is the right time to draft such a letter.
Well,
it's so hard for it. No.
Well, I also think that we can each reach out to our state legislators and talk to them. Both can be very effective. Perhaps the personal contact more so, but I'd be happy to support doing that as well. I can't for life figure out why the state would not have the fees for electric vehicles. I mean, it makes no sense. To give away the taxes makes no sense either, but the one I really don't understand is why people with electric vehicles would pay for their share of maintaining the roads. Befuddles me, but I guess that's the process of legislation. So I do support that if you want to take a crack at it.
Absolutely.
Unless you want to take a crack at it and give it to...
We can definitely... we have the ability to draft it, so we'd be comfortable doing that for your signature.
Okay.
Would you need a motion?
I think that would be preferred from staff's perspective.
Is there anybody that would like to see the letter? Perhaps is it possible to just email to everybody and look for comments?
Absolutely.
Once you get it done?
Yeah, we definitely could.
So let's get a draft out. Everybody has a chance to comment. We'll let Director Baker lead the efforts, and appreciate you, Joe, bringing it up. So do you want to propose a motion here?
I'll make the motion.
I'll second that motion.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to issue a letter, two letters, I guess, one at the state level and federal level to, what's the term we want to do, to ask them to
not oppose
reduction. I always hate to do the double negative, but...
Retaining the structure. Stating the sport's opposition to a gas tax holiday.
Well said, Mr. Prater. So
whatever he said.
Yeah. Okay.
I'll support it.
We have a motion, a second on the floor. Any other discussion? Okay. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? Okay, very good. Thank you, Joe, for your suggestion. Anything else under other business for the committee? Okay, that takes us to our really favorite part, which is adjournment. That's where I thought we were going. And if Mr. Klein is making a recommendation, I'm just going to say we are adjourned. Thank you.